From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Today, you are in for a special treat. We have Kenna Mitchell, and we're going to go inside the mind of a 17-year-old champion, which is, I mean, for me, that was a long time ago when I was 17, and I was not a champion. So this is going to be new ground for Mark Haney. But Kenna is a champion race car driver, and she's 17. So we're going to hear the story of her growing in this sport. And really, today's show is really about winning. So we're going to get in the side of the mind of somebody that really has figured out a way to persevere and win. And I think so many times today we look at young people and we're like, this society has changed. You know, so a lot of us old fogies do that. But today we're going to see what champions are made of. And so welcome to the show, Kenna.
Thank you.
Okay. So was that, okay. So what's the best way to introduce you? What kind of sports car driver are you?
I'd say definitely one that likes to keep trying even after you get knocked down.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. So we'll dive into that a little bit. But are there classes, are there certain types of cars? Maybe describe the business, if you will, of race car driving. Then where do you fit in and where do you race?
I race in late models, which is a NASCAR series, but I also ran like Legends, which is an INEC series. We kind of, like, for my first 3 years of high school, I did online so I could just race all over. And now we just race at All-American Speedway and a Madera Speedway.
Nice. Okay, so All-American Speedway, you probably know McAnally?
Yeah.
McAnally Racing? Okay, yeah, that guy's been on the show, not for a couple of years, but yeah, so I've interviewed... I don't know if I interviewed a somebody that was 17, but he brought some guests on the show, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, and it was intriguing to understand really what goes into racing. So maybe what's now as a 17-year-old, what's a day in the life look like for you? You said you're now going to Del Oro High School, but before you were homeschooled, so kind of describe today as a day in the life of a champion race car driver.
Well, before when we would do like race days, get up really early and go drive, fly wherever we were going. Now it's like when I get up early for school, I'm like, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. It's so different from when we're getting out of bed for racing. I'd be like, all right, let's go. And now I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed and go to school.
So you're not doing racing right now?
I am doing racing, but we're doing it a little differently to work with my school schedule. So like on Fridays, there's one class that I can miss at the end of the day. So like when we go down to Madera Speedway, it's about 2-hour, 45-minute drive. And I'll just miss my last class and get the work later so I can go down and get the practice in for the... like start of the weekend.
Okay, so describe, I describe you as a champion, but that's underselling it, I think. Can you describe some of the wins and kind of the progression of the achievements that you've made over the years?
So we started out in mini cups where it was like, it was really weird being in a car because I watched my dad race for so long. So we went mini cups, then we went bandos, which is where I won my first championship. And it was like a whole year of battling back and forth this one kid because I just had the worst luck on the inverts because I would qualify really well and then just invert would put me all the way at the back and have to race through the field to get to the front. And usually, I mean, I'd end up second. I won a few of them. And at the end of the year, it came down to the last race, which I needed to win. And I needed to set fast time. And it came together for that race. And it was really cool because it was like the first time like in racing, it really felt like accomplished.
Did it? It sounds like there was like a nemesis, a guy, somebody, was it a guy?
Yeah.
Who was beating you? How old were you at that time?
I was 13, I believe.
Okay. So and you, he's you like, came back.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was like 10. We still sometimes race together, but it's a lot different now than it was when we were in bandos.
Okay, so keep me through the journey a little bit. I want to ask you a little bit about competition in a minute, but walk me through this journey. So you won as a 13, kind of came out of nowhere a little bit, and then you've continued to win.
Yes, and then when I turned 14, we were going to run bandos in late models, and we decided, let's just stick with the junior late models. We ran in that series and did pretty good, but it was just a bit of rough luck for my first year. It was also first time being in a full-size car, going like, 70 miles down the straightaway, right into a turn.
Oh my gosh.
And then the next year we went out, we won the championship in the junior late models at All-American Speedway. We also had started running at Madera Speedway in the juniors and having like decent finishes there, but it was pretty cool winning a championship at All-American Speedway.
So you're driving a full-size car at 14. What kind of car are you driving?
A late model. They're kind of like NASCAR.
But what, like a little bit. What model? Like what? Like would it be a Toyota?
Oh yeah, Toyota.
So you're driving a regular car though. As a 14-year-old, nobody has a driver's license, obviously, at this stage. But you're racing around at 70 miles an hour as a 14-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Did your parents ever let you drive on the street?
Now I do.
Now you do. Okay. But as a 14-year-old, obviously you're a good driver. You know how to drive better probably than 90% of us adults. But you don't have a license. But did your parents ever let you drive on the street?
No.
Okay. I was looking to see if you were...
I would have loved to.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Because me growing up as a kid, I wanted to drive early, and my mom let me drive early a couple of times. And if you're listening, don't drive early if you're 60 or under 16 or don't have a license. But that was such a joy, you know, the first time you get behind a vehicle, and you know, especially once you get your driver's license, it's such a joy. So when you got your driver's license, how old were you? Were you 16 or 17?
16 and like 2 weeks.
Okay. Oh, okay. So just turned 16. Was that, tell me about that experience.
It was really nice to finally get my license for the first time. Usually when I'm backing up, I have someone spotting me, telling me where to go. So I messed up on my first test and backed into a curb.
Oh no.
Second time I got it. Are you talking about the
driver's test?
Yeah.
Oh God.
But then when I finally got on the road, I was so excited because I have a manual.
Okay.
And I was like, it's a little bit different than my race car, but it was fun.
You have a manual transmission as a 16-year-old? Mm-hmm. What kind of car do you got?
I got a BMW E46.
Okay.
M3.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. I don't know anybody that has a manual transmission these days. I mean, hardly. I think, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, no question. I love that. Okay. Walk me through it. I'm ADD, so I'll like bounce back and forth a little bit. Okay. Walk me through this, this championship, career that you've built so far.
So after the year where we won the championship, we were running in the late models and we started running in the pros. We still ran in the junior series though at Madera because it's a really competitive track, but it's a lot of fun because you see so many drivers out there. You get a race like tons of different people from all over the West Coast and some people who also come from out of state, which is cool to see. And there we actually were doing pretty good this year in the pros and started getting close to wins, but we're not quite there. But at Roseville, we've gotten a few wins in the pros there. The first one was kind of like a barely avoiding a wreck and taking the lead. And it was a fun race. And then the second time we won, we got our way up to the front.
And how long does a race last?
For All-American Speedway, it was, when I first started, 2 35-lap mains split by like, we would do one. Some other series would run, and then we would go back out for a second one. But this year, they started doing 50-lap mains and 100 laps in the super late models.
Oh, my God. So you've done a 100-lap race. How long does that take?
It depends, because if it's all green laps, it could be like 45 minutes. But I've had some races where it's nearly an hour and a half because cars wreck, people spin, and it just gets crazy out there.
How many times do you have to pull, let's say in a one-hour race, how many times do you pull over and do a pit stop?
We generally don't, unless you cut a tire down. Then we don't have like a pit stop like you would in, say, NASCAR or F4 or F1. We pull into the infield at Madera Speedway. We make like a little left into the infield to go through. If we need to change a tire because it gets cut, throw a tire on, you go back out at the back of the pack. But we do have, after 50 laps in the pros, we do a 10-minute break, do whatever we need to the cars that we can reasonably do on the track, and then we go back to green for 30 more laps.
What's the emotion like when you're getting ready to start the race? Are there nerves, or is it adrenaline? What's the emotion?
At the start of the race, it's definitely a lot of nerves. I mean, I've done probably a few thousand laps on a racetrack, but it's always just a little bit nervous. You don't know how it's going to start. Someone might wreck the whole field in the first lap. You might go green, get those passes you really want. Like, you don't really know until you cross that start-finish line for the first time.
Yeah. And so then settling in, how long does it take to sort of settle in and get comfortable in the middle of a race?
I'd say for me, probably like 10 laps.
Okay, 10 laps in.
Probably at the most 10 laps, because it's like the first 2-3 laps, everyone's fighting like they're going to win on the first lap. Then they start settling in, you start getting past those side-by-sides.
Is it best to do that fight at the beginning? I mean, is the beginning of the race obviously is important. The end of the race is the most important. Are there certain sort of strategies in terms of pacing yourself and sort of playing
it? Definitely depends on the track, because for some tracks, like Irwindale Speedway, that track, first 2-3 laps after a restart, you want to be on the bottom taking those passes, and then you just got to settle into the high line, because that's probably the fastest track I've ever been on in a late model. So it's like 2-3 laps, you got to be fighting for it, taking those passes where you can get them, and then you get up to the top and settle in, start playing your games. At Madera Speedway, like, if you have the opportunity, you know, I can pass this guy, you want to go for that pass as soon as you start. But if you're not entirely sure where you're at, you can kind of save the car for the end. We've seen that before with people. They just settle into the top groove, bottom groove, keep running their laps. At the end of the race, their car is still all ready to go, and they make a lot of passes.
Interesting. Have you ever, so what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you in the middle of a race?
Brakes went out at Madera Speedway a few races ago. We were in the lead. We were, like, gaining, probably had half straight away from the rest of the cars. And then I could feel my brakes just getting
squishy.
You're
like, what do you need brakes for? You're supposed to be, you just push it on the gas. No. Is that how you do it? You kind of, like, ride the brake and the gas at the same time?
I think it was just because we were running the high line. Or no, we were running really fast on the low line. And I was like, maybe I have to go to the high line, because up there you brake less. And you try to be either all on the gas or all on the brake, and then you don't really want to be on them at the same time, except for on restarts or starts, because that's when you want to be really hard on the brake, hard on the gas, you let off and go.
Okay.
But in the race, you don't do that because it's not really good for the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's definitely was like a bit of a letdown, because we had a huge gap, like when my brakes went out. And we went straight up in the wall.
You mean you had a huge gap, meaning you were winning?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, like, I would be, like, up here on the track, and they were, like, way back here. Oh. We were just making laps.
The brakes went out.
Yeah. They could see them glowing, and we weren't really sure what we wanted to do, because we were testing out something new. It didn't quite work out. And wasn't, thankfully, the worst damage I've had, which was a few years ago in the pros. I got put up in the wall a little bit, cut a tire, went straight in the wall, full throttle.
Oh, wow.
And that was the worst wreck I've had, but it was definitely that one at Madera was the most heartbreaking, because we were like in the lead. We would have had it too if we hadn't lost the brakes.
So the one where you went into the wall, were you shaken up? Did you have injuries?
Not really, because they're really secure cars. Like, you have a Hans that holds your head in place, so, like, you don't get whiplash. You have belts that are just holding you down tight. So, at most, like, you might get a little bit of bruising from it, but they're really secure cars.
So, I've been out to All-American Speedway, and it's so damn loud. I mean, how's your hearing? You still got your hearing? Obviously, yeah. You got it.
Because some people have, like, most of the time people have either, like, headphones or like earbuds, so they can hear their spotters. And I'd say it muffles a good amount of sound, but sometimes I'm like, you know what, this might be damaging my hearing when I'm driving the Super around with nothing on.
So your hearing's still normal. Have you ever had your ears checked or anything? No, you hear well, you know what's up. Yeah, interesting. I was surprised at how, well, I went out there. I've been racing a few times over the years, but I went out there, I don't know, a year or two with my grandkids, and I was surprised. I was shocked at how loud it was, and you know, nobody else was. I was the only one, but it's a fun atmosphere out there. Who comes out to watch you? Your mom and dad. You've got a sister, right?
Yeah, she sometimes comes out to watch, but it's mostly my parents, some of my family, friends, and definitely a lot of fans come out to watch us.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, do you have fans of you specifically? Have you developed a following?
Mm-hmm.
All right, tell me about that.
We have a lot of little fans, little girls out at All American Speedway. Aww. And every time we see them, we're always waving at them while we're sitting all lined up. And it's really cute seeing them, because it's like we want to see more kids in racing, especially girls, because it's a lot of guys out there.
What's the percentage of guys and girls versus girls?
I've had some races where it'd be like 10 guys and I'm the only girl out there.
Oh, wow.
Or I'm not really sure the exact percent, but it's definitely male-dominated sport.
Is there a point in time in the sport, in the ages, where men and women are separated in terms of racing? Or
I wouldn't say so.
I've heard of like Danica Patrick. Well, who do you look up to in terms of female racing?
It's cool seeing like some of the girls like in trucks and in NASCAR, but it's definitely a struggle though, because most of the big teams already have their drivers.
Okay, Woody, I'm not following you on that. The big teams have their drivers.
Like,
why is that a struggle?
Most of the girls we see like aren't quite at like the top of the racing, and I would love to see like another girl or even make it there myself be mm-hmm. out there winning in NASCAR trucks or ARCA.
Okay, so you're a role model as a 17-year-old. You're a role model for the 10-year-olds and the 12-year-olds and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. they're out there and they're rooting for you. You probably have half the audience rooting for you because you know we pulling for the you know the person that's. You're not the underdog, though. I was going to say the underdog, but you're not the underdog. Are you the one that's expected to win typically?
I would say for the most part, when we go out and race pros now at All American Speedway, we can expect most likely we could win. There's a few people we have competition with, but we got the pros pretty well figured out. We started running supers, and I actually got third at the last race there, which was really cool because we fought for that spot in the last like 10 laps.
You mentioned when you were younger there was this nemesis and you finally beat him. Now is there an arch rival at all? As you have like one or two people that are like, oh, this guy's racing, I'm going to spank him.
I wouldn't say exactly because we race with a pretty good amount of people. But there's some people when I got out there, I'm like, I know this guy's going to bump me, but I can't let him turn me or get around.
Okay, so what's that? When people start bumping you, what's the... That must create a... Does that create anger? What happens when they start bumping you? Are you like...
I would say more annoyed because there is definitely a way you can do it to pass people. But it's when people start doing it center of the corner. They do it like just... They don't do it quite right. And it lifts you up, messes them up. And I'm like, come on, man. You could have had a clean pass there if you just did it a little bit smoother.
Do they do that because it's bad sportsmanship or because they're inexperienced drivers?
It sometimes depends. There are definitely some drivers you see
who... Or they're just like, whatever it takes to win.
Yeah. There's definitely some drivers you see that overcharge it in the corner and slam into a back another car and wreck both of them. But there is like a game to it where you want... Like I've done it before. You just barely tap them on the exit of the corner. It sends them up the track and then you get underneath them, fly right by them.
Hmm. Sounds exciting. Okay. So let's talk about... I'm going to vary from racing, but the life of somebody that races... it's like you've got this full-time job that you've had for a long time, and you mentioned you were homeschooling, now you're in regular school. What kind of sacrifices have you had to make? Obviously, during COVID, maybe it didn't feel like as much of a sacrifice not to go to school, but what kind of sacrifices are there for somebody who's such a committed person to their sport?
I would say in homeschool, there was definitely less sacrifice because I could do school at the track. But now I have one class I've skipped a few times or gotten checked out early and missed it because want to be at the racetrack, want to be practicing. And just like, I do.
I mean, like being a kid, like going to dance and I don't know, hanging out at the football game and all that. Do you do all that stuff?
We do have the next Madera race. It's the same night as homecoming, but I'm like, I'd rather be out at the racetrack.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So it's a sacrifice that you
choose to make.
Really, it's not really that much of a sacrifice because it's what your passion is.
I don't think there's too much like I've really felt like I've missed because I had a lot of fun in like middle school dances and stuff. But now it's just like from what I've heard from other people because I haven't really been to high school is like they're a lot of fluff. Like the ones you really don't want to miss are like prom night.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my daughter was a very competitive gymnast, and so she probably practiced, I don't know, 30, 40 hours a week. But she always went to school. It was after school type stuff, so there wasn't a lot of school, but she had to, there was always practice, and so hanging out, she had to skip a lot of the, you know, Thursday night, we're building the float or whatever it is. So I know there was a lot of sacrifice for her, and I don't know that she regrets it, but I always kind of wonder who might regret it a little bit or if it's, you know, she had a social life within the gym mm-hmm. and you probably have that social life within the racing
community? I definitely would say I know a lot more people in racing than I do at school, so I don't really feel like I'm missing out too much, especially since my friends do come out to the races as well.
Okay, so what, as a 17-year-old, what are you into besides racing? Are you into music, movies, social media?
I would say I like reading and writing a lot.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Are you a creative type person?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What kind of stuff do you like to read?
I like to read mostly like sci-fi stories and like generally books where it's like I really feel like I can like imagine it and make sense in my mind how it's like working out for the characters.
Hmm. Interesting. Can you name a book that you just like, oh, that's one that
it's
I should
called,
read?
One called H2O, but not a mermaid book. It was a really interesting like one. It was like about like a meteor hit Earth and like caused this crazy thing with the rain. And like that was really interesting because the characters were all really smart in it. I was like, that's the kind of book I love reading where they actually make sense in their actions.
I love it. So what about the risk associated with this? When we think about racing, we know it's a dangerous sport. There's a, you know, gymnastics was dangerous for my daughter as well. She ended up getting hurt and jacking up her knee. But I mean, we think about racing and it's almost like we expect to see crashes and we hear about catastrophic type stuff. What kinds of concerns are out there in terms of, you know, just the risk?
I would say in late models, there's definitely concerns for like, if you flip or catch on fire, it's definitely more risky than if you're just hitting a wall or bouncing off another car. But there are other series I race, the INEX Legends. We did have one time we were racing out in Colorado, and if you hit someone hard enough, you move forward just a little bit in the seat, and that's what I did, and I hit my knee off the steering column. Thankfully, I didn't have one of the worst injuries you can get from it, but there's definitely some, like, risks for injury you can have in those cars. There was also a guy though who did cartwheels behind me and he's totally fine.
Wow. So what do your parents think of this? Obviously your dad is a racer, he's been involved in this, but like, are they encouraging? Your mom too?
Yeah,
I've seen her like posting stuff, and you know, I know she is proud of you, but you know, sometimes there's that scary to have your child out there doing crazy stuff.
She tells
stuff.
Me that a lot. She's like, I'm watching you go around. I'm just hoping no one touches you.
Oh my gosh. Is your dad your coach?
I would say yeah, in some aspect.
Okay. In what aspect? How does your dad influence you besides the fact that he's super knowledgeable?
Like definitely pushing me to look for the opportunities when I'm both out on the track and just getting a better understanding of like the cars, what we're running, and trying to do my best when we're racing.
Hmm, interesting. Well, your dad's a highly successful entrepreneur, and I sort of think winning, people that know how to win, that ends up being, whether it's racing or entrepreneurship or gymnastics, when you get the taste of winning, it sort of stays with you. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, is because the mindset of being a winner, it doesn't really go away just because you changed what you're competing with. So in thinking about your world right now, you're racing, is this something you intend to continue to do kind of as a lifelong journey, or do you want to parlay some of this experience into other things?
I would love to keep racing if I get the opportunity to, because it's such a fun sport to be in and you could really do a lot with it. But I've also kind of considered, like, I love math and building, and I would love to do architecture, but it would mean sacrificing racing for, I think it's the programs are usually 5 years. And I'm like, if I had to, I'd much rather go with racing.
Interesting. Now, you said if you get the opportunity, what determines whether you get the opportunity or not?
Like getting a ride from a team, because at our current level, we can like afford to keep racing. But if we wanted to go ARCA or trucks or NASCAR, it definitely, you need a team to be on.
Okay. That means that's the financial backing with sponsors and that kind of thing. Okay. And so how difficult, I assume that's pretty hard then, it sounds like.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, the higher level you get to, it's harder to find a team that has an opening and one you know, like, this is a team I want to be with.
Interesting. So when does that sort of transition for you? So you're 17 now. Is there like, well, at 18, that's when it happens? Or kind of, can you kind of make those decisions or keep working it at your level now for a while until you get discovered?
I definitely say, like, there's no, like, limit where it's like, if you hit this age, you won't be discovered anymore. Like, once you hit this age, you're more likely to be. Because it's definitely people who've been, like, who've made it pretty big, younger or older. We've seen, like, a lot younger drivers do really well, like, in NASCAR. I don't remember his name, but I know his first race, like, the Coliseum and actual NASCAR, he nearly won. And it's cool to see because it's like, that could be me in a few years.
Interesting. Because I was going to ask you, like, what inspires you? And that must inspire you to see somebody else that's super young have that kind of success. And you know, so you know it's possible. Mm-hmm. Is there any aspect of it that is, like, how hard you work? Or is it pretty much show up on game day and go?
There definitely is. Because, like, you got to work hard. You got to keep up sponsorships and, like, putting yourself out there and making yourself known. Because there, like, if you don't, like, try to keep up as much as possible, like,
do you have social media, or what do you do in terms of, like, getting yourself, putting yourself out there?
I have an Instagram, a Facebook, and a YouTube we've started working on.
What's your Instagram handle?
Kenna Mitchell 7, I believe, _7, I believe.
Kenna Mitchell _7. Mm-hmm. 7's your number, I take it.
Yep.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so we've talked about most of the things that are, I guess, on my mind. What question have I not asked you about winning and your career so far?
I'm not really sure.
So what are your, maybe just give me your, like, your short-term and mid-term goals so that we can kind of see where your head is at, and then what, so we can kind of track you against your expectations of yourself.
I'd say short-term goal, I would love to win at Madera Speedway either this year or early next year, because it's a fun track. We're right there on getting a win. We've gotten a few podiums. We have had some wrecks there from other people getting into us. And I'd say midterm goal, I'd love to do, like, get, like, podium or win in an SRL race.
All right. And then when, at what age, or what point, you mentioned pro, what is there a point where you start getting paid, or how does that work?
Depends on where you finish in the race, because from, I think, yeah, in Bandos, it depends on the car count, because if you had more cars, like, I think it's a minimum of 8 cars, you can get paid to where, depending on where you finish. So, like, juniors to pros to supers, there's differences in how much you win. But if you win, like, the next weekend at Madera Speedway, it's $10,000 to win. So it just really depends on where you place, because you get, like, $100 for 10th place or $1,000 for first place.
Oh, exciting stuff. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show today. Last question, and I want you to think maybe about the people that are following you, maybe it's these younger girls that look up to you. Any advice in terms to them in terms of what they should be doing now so that they can have the kind of achievement that you've had so far?
Do you mean as in already racing or trying?
Yeah, the ones that want to get into it. Maybe they're already thinking about racing, or they're already racing, but they haven't really had your achievements yet.
I would say keep looking into as many opportunities as you can, because They don't always come up quite often, especially for younger girls.
Okay, so when you get the opportunity, keep your mind open for opportunities, and then seize them when they get there. Well, Kenna, thank you for coming on the show, and congrats on your success. I'm proud of you. I had somebody on my show that was, I think, 16 or 17 when I first started it, and she was a singer. And now she's on The Voice, right? She's going through this season. She's on The Voice. She's a Kristen Brown's a Roseville product, and she was on my show just as a up and coming singer. And now she's on the Voice and really off to the races. So it's exciting to be a part in some way of somebody's early experience, because I know that this is just the start of something really special. So congrats on your success.
Thank you.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.